This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
You can also reach us at Nation Radio at theteam1260.com. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. Hi there, it's Alan Mitchell. We, of course, have a great contest running right now. You email us your top 10 picks for the 2011 draft. If you're the winner, you identify everybody correctly. We will give you a gorgeous Edmonton Oilers jersey with the name of the first pick that the Oilers make on the back. And we've got a few we want to run through here. This is from Rob in Russia, top 10, actually from Taiwan, which is very cool. This is the top 10 for Robin. RNH at number one, Sean Couturier, Huberdeau, Adam Larson, Ryan Strome, Gabriel Landeskog, Ryan Murphy, Hamilton, McNeil, and Zibanejad. That's an interesting one. It's very unusual compared to many others, but there's a good reason behind all of those picks. This is Brandon Drescher's top 10, RNH at one, Landeskog, Huberdeau, Larson, Couturier, Strome, Boileau, who's kind of all over the place. I've seen as high as five and obviously doesn't make some list. Sven Barchi at number eight, Ryan Murphy, and Zibanejad there at number 10. And also, just pass this along from Michael Clark saying about the contract Philadelphia Flyers are considering for Brizgalov. Insanity, walk away and let Ilya go find his pot of gold in the KHL. So there you go. Interesting input. We love your emails at Nation Radio at the Team 1260. Joined now by Matt Bug from Dauber Hockey. Matt, how are you this afternoon?
Good. How are you doing, Alan?
Good, good. Hey, why are we seeing so much? I was thinking about asking you this question this morning when I was driving in. Why are we seeing so much shuffling from the end of the season to now? I'm thinking of a guy like Zibanejad or Boileau, who I just mentioned. Is it a matter of scouts getting back to, you know, sitting down and talking about, or are we just discovering the European players in Zibanejad's case later in the season or after the season ends?
I think a player like Zibanejad has been on the radar for the entire season. I think the reason, though, that he's starting to climb is because teams are starting to find the preferences that they want going into the draft. We had such a muddled group, and no one was quite sure where they were going to be drafting. There was so much movement there in the standings. And B, the combine, I think, settled a lot of questions, and also the CHL playoffs. We saw certain players that didn't perform quite as well as they were expected to, and that's allowed some European players to sort of sneak up the rankings.
Okay. We've seen Redline has their forward and defenseman group out now, and there are a couple of surprises there. Should we expect anybody that isn't obviously known to jump into the top 10 or top 15 that hasn't been talked about, or do we pretty much know who's going to be in the top 15 or so?
It looks to be a fairly set top 10. Two players that I could see sneaking in are Mark McNeil from Prince Albert and Oscar Klefbom from Färjestad. Both of those players are sort of late risers. McNeil's been on my radar for a little bit, and I've been a big fan of his since midget. But teams are just starting to come to his attention despite a sort of underwhelming under-18s, whereas Klefbom, he's a 6'3 Swedish defenseman who can play both ways, and he can play any way that you want him to. So those are certainly valuable players that teams might like over some of the lukewarm options on the board.
With a guy like Klefbom or Brodin, the Swedish defenseman, it's really hard to get an idea about offense based on stats. I mean, you can obviously, the scouting report implies that they have a two-way game. How best to quantify that, a guy like Klefbom, if a team, say the Oilers pick him and he's like 15th or they get him at 19th, what kind of player are we looking at? Is he a smooth skater, or what are his big advantages? What are big assets as far as Klefbom is concerned?
Well, you're looking at a player that's not afraid to change the game using his vast skill set. Not only, as I said, is he big, but he's a wonderful skater. He has a very long stride and, you know, helps him move a country mile with every step. But he's also not afraid to get physical. And I would put him quite far ahead of where David Rundblad was in his draft year in terms of his own zone play. Rundblad, of course, had the huge 50-plus point season in the Elitserien this year, but scouts are still questioning his defensive acumen, and I don't think we'll have that problem with Klefbom.
Speaking of defensive acumen, Jim Matheson was on this morning with the Pipeline Boys, and he mentioned that the Oilers have an interest in three defensemen near the top of the draft. Larson, obviously, Dougie Hamilton, and Duncan Siemens. A very defensive defenseman, obviously a quality prospect. Do you see that being a value pick if they, say, trade up to like 12 or 13 and pick a Duncan Siemens? Or do you think there's a chance that he might slide based on the fact that he's not an offensive-type player?
I think Siemens is actually the kind of player who will be sort of overrated if we were to look back on the draft in a few years. Sort of like Dylan McElrath last year. Teams are drafting him because of what he can be. Of course, you do that with every prospect, but the upside is so enticing with these 6'4", 6'5 guys that can move as well as they do. Siemens has an okay offensive game, but teams are going to be hoping that he develops that, whereas you look at someone like Ryan Murphy, yeah, he's 5'10", 170, 180, but he's a guy that can play on your power play in less than 5 years.
Can you set the draft for us? Ryan Murphy's a great example because I think he's one of the eight best players in the draft, eight or nine. Is there a top eight or nine and then a tier that's like 9 or 10 to 50? Is that how it looks to you?
Certainly. In my books, there is that top eight of Nugent Hopkins, Landeskog, Huberdeau, Larson, Hamilton, Strome, Couturier, and Murphy. And there could be so much movement up in that group that we could easily see one of them fall. In my mock, I've got, for example, Couturier going to Winnipeg at 7, which seems kind of low right now, but there are just so many players that shot up the rankings late that a guy that did everything well but didn't stand out where he played could certainly fall.
Okay. With that in mind, would it benefit a team like the Oilers, who are sitting at 19 and also at 31, but you've got that vast array in the second tier, would it maybe benefit them to trade the 19 for, say, 37 and 62?
That's one way to look at it. The other way is that you've got players from 15 to about 35, even downwards to 45, that are about the same quality of player. So even if the Oilers can't trade up from 19, they may still end up with a blue-chip defensive prospect or a blue-chip forward. Having said that, moving down is always a smart strategy. You see teams like Colorado that, like to collect those second-round picks, and you have some leeway there. You can take some risks on guys and end up with a Ryan Stoa, but it's okay because you draft a Paul Stastny.
I've got a few, actually about five or six here. Got some emails from Speeds and some other folks asking about specific prospects. So I'm just going to read them off, and if you can give me a thumbnail sketch and then where you think they might go in the draft. Let's begin with Matt Nieto.
Nieto is a very interesting player. He's one of the best pure talents in the draft if you're looking at skating ability and hands and the ability to do things at top speed. Physically, he's quite raw, and his all-around game needs some work. But watching him at Boston this year, it was amazing how he stood out, even against players that are 4 or 5 years older than him. The upside is so raw, and you also look at someone like Rocco Grimaldi, who's the same way, that if they can add NHL-caliber weight, they could be first, second-line players.
Where do you see Nieto going in the draft?
I think he's a player that might have to wait a while, perhaps into the third round. Grimaldi, though, is a player that could easily sneak into the first, but I have him going in the early part of the second.
Okay, let's go with Alex Kokhlechev. What can you tell us about him, and where will he go?
He's a player that I'm very, very surprised hasn't gotten more attention this year. Much like Burmistrov last year, he does everything at top speed extremely well. He's a very creative player. A couple of things that he's missing are size. He's only about 5'10", 5'11", I believe, unless his vitals were updated at the combine. But he's a player that there's first-line talent there, and you can't say that a lot about a kid that could be taken in the 20 to 30 range. Having said that, he's missing a two-way game, and that's, I think, the big thing that separates him from Burmistrov last year.
Okay. Shane Prince, a lot of talk about him because of the offense, but I know ISS has him, I think, early 70s.
Prince is interesting. It's easy to overrate players in some situations because they're able to play as sort of the third wheel on a very successful top line. But in Prince's case, I don't want to say that he stirred the drink there, but he was as vital a component to that line as the other two. He needs to work on a couple of things, but I think that he's a great pick in the third round.
Okay, you think he'll go in the third round?
I think so.
Okay, and what about Adam Clendenning?
Clendenning is another player that I'm really surprised didn't get more attention during the year. He's a guy, as you say, that could sneak into the top 30. He's so, so smart. He may have the best outlet pass in the draft. He's your typical puck-moving defenseman. He needs to work on adding muscle and mass so that he can better defend his own end. But the tools are there for him to be one of those valuable puck movers.
Okay. And final one before we move back, and I want to get your input on the top of the draft. What about Nick Shore?
Nick Shore is interesting. He comes from, of course, the Shore family. There's about four of them, I think. There's an 11-year-old, and he's drawing attention in Colorado. I think Shore could go as high as the early second. He's a very cerebral center, and he'd be a great addition to any pipeline that sort of needs a safe guy that can play anywhere in your lineup. He kind of reminds me of Paul Stastny in some ways.
Oh, okay. All right. At the top of the draft, I think we're pretty much established with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins going number one, and three or four players possibly going, you know, right away after that. How does your top five look right now?
Well, I've got Nugent-Hopkins going one, of course. Landeskog going to Colorado, Huberdeau to Florida, Larson to New Jersey, and Hamilton to the Islanders.
Okay.
Although I think it's interesting about Larson because, you know, he picked up that reputation at the Combine that he didn't have before and won't have any more time to refute of being sort of a space cadet. According to some of the feedback, his interviews were a little strange. And what do you do if you're a GM in the 8 to 10 range and he's still on the board but you never had a chance to talk to him? Do you take the risk or do you weigh the fact that he didn't score as many points as you might like and that he's got that attitude? I could see him falling quite a bit.
This is Larson?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. That's interesting because the word we get is that the Oilers, and this is obviously conjecture and rumor and all of that stuff, but the Oilers are trying very hard to trade into the top five or six, hoping that Larson might fall. So that's an interesting little tidbit you passed along. Do you see the Islanders possibly trading out of number five? We've heard rumors about that.
I think they very well may look at doing so. I think at least they'll entertain offers for it, as most GMs will. But I think if Dougie Hamilton is still on the board, there isn't a better player for their team right now. He's got the ability to be a number one defenseman. According to the new combine measurements, he's the same height as Alexiak at about 6'6.5", which is pretty amazing when you consider how fast that he can move and how good his hands are.
So, and let's do 6 through 10 here, and then I want to ask you a little bit about the Oilers picks at 19 and 31. How's your 6 through 10 list look?
I have Strom to Ottawa, Couturier to Winnipeg, Siemens to Columbus, and Murphy to Boston.
How much, they were talking, like Guy and Dean were talking about this on the pipeline as well. How much difference is there between Nugent-Hopkins and Strom? Statistically and physically, they're very similar.
Well, it's interesting that you mention that because Strom had almost identical everything across the board from his vitals to his numbers to Taylor Hall and Tyler Seguin last year. And you're right, why is there that question about him not cracking the top five? Maybe he could fall to eight. But I think it's because he's just a little more raw in every way. He's a kid that doesn't show up every shift yet, although he certainly has the tools to do so. And I think it would really benefit him going back another year to be, A, the guy, and, B, to be coaxed to play more of a two-way game.
Yeah. I did talk to his coach early on, maybe a couple of months ago, and he said that they deliberately, you know, had him do the power play and even strength, but kept him away from the penalty kill because it was a matter of strength, and they just really wanted him to focus on those two elements. So I think another year in junior probably would benefit him. When do you head for the draft?
I'll be leaving on a very late flight Thursday, and I think I get there at about 10 o'clock, and then, of course, I'll be there through Sunday.
Now, is this your first draft?
No, I've been to Columbus in 07, and I was at the draft in L.A. last year.
Well, we're looking forward to you're going to give us some input, and we're going to really appreciate it next weekend because as the draft goes on, you know, it becomes harder and harder, you know, unless you've read about these guys and have some information on it. So we're looking forward to that. Where else will you, aside from us, where else can we read you and hear during draft week?
Well, during the week, I'll be doing one-hour Q&As each day on DiverHockey.com. It's sort of a tradition that I've staked up the last 5 years.
Okay.
There might be some other bonus content throughout the week. We have to see what sort of questions we get. And, you know, hopefully I can provide some insight, unless the Oilers go far off the board and take a Pelch or a Quist or something again this year. But, yeah, I'll certainly be there. And if anyone has any questions, feel free to email me. My address is bug@dobberhockey.com.
Perfect. I just hope we don't have an event like 2002 where they announced Jesse Niinimäki. And there's not a lot of information available.
Well, it's interesting. Now we have sites that like Elite Prospects and whatnot, but I don't want any unexpected surprises either.
No, absolutely. You know what? We're delighted to have you as part of our reporting team, and we're going to be counting you on a big way, and we so much appreciate your help, Matt.
Not a problem, Alan.
All right. Matt Bug from Dobber Hockey. Interesting guy. You know what? He really does offer some insight. I didn't know that about Adam Larson, about the combine. I had not read that some of his interviews had been a little wonky or a little bit off the board or unique. But you know what? I can understand a National Hockey League team maybe being a little hesitant about investing a pick that high, because number one, if you look at Columbus as an example, this is an organization that has one general manager who was let go because of what happened in the first round, specifically with a Russian player, and Scott Housen, who you know, is working very hard and diligently to make that team more respectable. But again, the draft takes time, and if you're going to invest a pick and you're not certain coming out of the interview, I wonder if the interview causes as many questions as it does answer as many questions. That'd be something we'd like to you know, one day ask a scout or somebody who is in those meetings. One day, maybe during the summertime after the draft, I'd love to have a scout who has been a part of the 2011 draft just sit down and ask questions like that. Like one that I'd love to ask, aside from the Adam Larson question, how was the interview, is I noticed that the mucky mucks and the GM and the coach and all the high-end guys and the owner are there on the Friday night, and I wonder if the scouts are just kind of waiting for them to leave on the Saturday if they return, because it really is, I think, the domain of those guys who, you know, get in their vehicles and drive God knows where across the prairies or across, you know, whatever part of Europe to find these players, and it's their big day. I mean, I don't know anybody who has ever talked to a scout or spent any time around scouts, whether it be baseball or hockey, that doesn't think that the draft is the big day, and then after the draft you take a couple of months off. So maybe in the next few weeks we'll have an opportunity to talk to a scout or a former scout about their timeline through the year, and I'd really like to know if they sort of smile at each other when the suits exit the day number two of the draft, because I bet the answer is yes. Coming up, we have more on Nation Radio.